Hello and welcome to another edition of Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. Today is Saturday. It is June the 24th of 2017. And I haven't done one of these Word Magazines in a while, but I wanted to get back in on track. And I said sometime back when I did the Word Magazine that dealt with the introduction of the new coherence-based genealogical method and the application of that to the modern critical text represented in the Nesselalon 28th edition and United Bible Society 5th corrected editions, that I had wanted to do an episode dealing with the major variants that are represented now in the Catholic epistles with the application of this new method. And that would mean one on 2 Peter 3:10 and also on Jude 5. So in this episode, I'm going to focus on Jude 5. And I went, read the apparatus for the NA28. Some of this is going to be a little bit technical, but I'm going to do a blog post. It's going to be put on my blog, jeffriddle.net, and I am transliterating the Greek phrases, and I'm going to list the different variants and the manuscripts so that if you're not a Greek reader, you can sort of understand some of this as well. So here's a little bit of the background. As I've noted before, in the new state-of-the-art modern critical text, which is the Nesselalon 28th edition, which came out in 2012, 5 years ago now. For the first time, what was significant about that update, that 28th edition as opposed to the 27th edition, was that they made use for the first time of the so-called coherence-based genealogical method. And this is the new method that is being used and promoted in the German Bible Institute in Münster and in other circles that are making use of cutting-edge text criticism. And in particular, I pointed out in that episode that there is a scholarly edition, critical edition of the New Testament that's much more expanded than the handbooks. I mean, the Nesselon and the UBS are the handbooks. But there's a bigger project, and it's called the Editio Critica Major. I'm going to abbreviate it in my notes as the ECM. And so what they did was, with Nesselon 28, for the first time, they took the application of this coherence-based genealogical method in the Editio Critica Major, and they had issued the Catholic epistles for this, and so just the Catholic epistles in the NA28 had these new changes. And if you have the Nesselon 28th edition in the introduction on pages 50 and 51, it lists 33 changes that occurred from the Nesselon 27th to the Nesselon 28th editions. Most of these are minor, but there are two relatively major changes. One of those is in 2 Peter 3:10, where there is a conjecture that NA28 has a reading that doesn't appear in any extant Greek manuscript. The other one is Jude 5. And so this is what, again, we're going to look at in this episode. And I might just notice, by the way, sort of the story sort of continues to unfold. It's been now 5 years. The Nesselon 28th edition came out 5 years ago. And most recently, I noticed that on the Evangelical Text Criticism blog, which is a blog that is run by, contributed to by evangelical scholars who essentially embrace the modern critical text. They had a couple of interesting posts in there sort of updating continuing work that's being done by German scholars who are using the coherence-based genealogical method. Two key updates. One of those is that in June, this month, June of 2017, there was the publication of an edition of the book of Revelation, a textual study of Revelation in a series called Text und Textwert. It's a German series. And apparently in this series, it represents sort of the rough outwork of what will appear in the Editio Critica Major. So it has the witnesses that are then sort of honed down from this text and text word edition. Then it's sort of honed down, put in the Editio Critica Major. And then when the handbook is released, it's honed down even more. So that's interesting. The book of Revelation, it seems like they're making headway and applying the method. It's going to be very interesting to see what changes they're going to suggest for the next modern critical edition of Revelation. And then also on the Evangelical Text Criticism blog, there was recently a note that in August of 2017, there's going to be a two-volume Editio Critica Major edition of Acts. And so again, we're seeing now the second stages. First was Catholic Epistles. Next will be the Book of Acts, and then probably after that, Revelation. So there will be, I'm guessing in the near future, there's going to be an NA29, and it's going to incorporate the use of the coherence-based genealogical method in the Book of Acts. Again, it'll be interesting to see what changes are made. And I'm guessing it probably won't be till the 30th edition, the NA 30th edition, that they'll incorporate the changes in Revelation, because we've just got the text doing Textwert, and we don't yet have the Editio Critica Major edition of Revelation. So again, I think their projection is by 2030 they hope to complete the entirety of this project. But again, one of the critiques of this from someone like me, who's an advocate for the Textus Receptus of the Greek New Testament, is that if you have sort of hitched yourself to the wagon of the modern critical text, you have essentially accepted an always changing text, a never stable, never fixed text. It will be perpetually being tinkered with by modern critical scholars who don't necessarily have any connection to the church. And maybe in Germany, you know, they might be Lutherans. They might be people who are in a state church. But certainly you're hitching yourself to a text that is not connected to an evangelical or a conscientiously confessional orthodox church organization. So anyways, with that introduction, let's go on and look now specifically at what is happening in Jude 5. Of course, Jude is a short book in the New Testament. It's the last of the Catholic epistles in the typical ordering of the canonical books. It's right before the book of Revelation. There are only 25 verses in it, so there's only one chapter. So sometimes people say Jude chapter 1, verse 5. Sometimes they just say Jude 5. So the major issue here is the changes in NA28. They use the word Jesus or Jesus rather than the word in Greek kurios, or with the definite article ha kurios, the Lord. And so we can pick up on the change if we just compare some modern translations. So here is the way Jude 5 reads in the King James Version, which follows the Textus Receptus. It says, "I will therefore put you in remembrance, though ye once knew this, how that the Lord, having saved the people out of Egypt, afterward destroyed them that believed not." So it's a reference back to the book of Exodus and the destruction of, and Numbers, the destruction of those who rebelled against God during the time of the Exodus from Egypt. So it uses the word, "the Lord did this." Now, in the NA28, that word, the Lord, Hakurios, has been changed to Jesus, Jesus. And even before the NA28 came out, the English Standard Version adopted this new reading. I'm guessing there were people who were aware that this is that the winds had shifted in modern scholarship, and there was a preference that was developing for the use of Jesus, Jesus. And so English Standard Version was ahead of the curve with regard to the adopting the modern critical text. And so Jude 5 of the ESV reads, "Now I want to remind you, although you once fully knew it, that Jesus, who saved a people out of the land of Egypt, afterward destroyed those who did not believe." So that's the issue. Should the text read as in the traditional text, the Lord having saved the people out of Egypt, or should it read Jesus having saved, or who saved a people out of the land of Egypt? So let's look at the external evidence. And by external evidence, I mean how do the literal manuscripts that record the Jude, how do they stack up? How do they compare? And examine this, I use the apparatus from the Nestle-Aland 28th edition. And the first thing I noticed when I looked at the apparatus is that before we get to the Lord or Jesus reading, there are a couple of minor variations right at the beginning of the verse that are listed there. There are a few manuscripts that include the conjunction un or therefore. They include Codex C, Codex I, a few others. And there's one manuscript, and it happens to be one of the papyri, that inserts right at the beginning the word adelphoi, or brethren, or brothers. So let me see, I'll pull up my Greek text of the NA28, and it would read something like, "I will therefore put you in remembrance, brethren," inserts the word brethren, but it's a singular reading. There's no other manuscript that collaborates that. When we get to the major variation, is that the phrase that's in the King James Version, it's rendered as, "Though ye once knew this, how that the Lord." In the Textus Receptus, it reads, "Idates humas hapax tuta hati ha kurias." The Nestle-Aland 27th edition puts the humas in brackets, and it, instead of tuta, it reads panta, and then in the Nestle-Aland 27th, it also put the definite article ha in ha kurios, also in brackets. The big change in the Nestle-Aland 28, it reads idatas humas hapax panta hati Jesus. So there's also a question of word order. Where does the word hapax, once, where should it be? And again, the major change is instead of kurios or hakurios, the Lord, it reads Jesus. And so then if you look at the apparatus for the NA28, you see that it lists no less than 13 variations. And so this tells us something kind of interesting, that there is a lot of variation in this verse. There are a lot of places where the manuscripts diverge related to this verse. And I think, you know, one of the things that certainly seems to be the case is that the Catholic epistles were probably not as widely used and not accepted as early as, say, the Gospels or Paul's epistles. And so the manuscript evidence, the early manuscript evidence, and the achievement of a consensus around what the manuscript should, what the definitive manuscript should be, came much later than with the Gospels and with the Pauline epistles. So we've got lots of variations, and I've again transliterated these, and I'll post these on my blog. But there are 13 different variations. The Codex Sinaiticus, It reads, Humas Panta Hati Kurias Hapax. Basically, you, all things that a Lord or the Lord wants. Then there's the second reading is Humas Hapax Tuta Hati Hakurias. And this is found in 1175, 1448, and in the Byzantine manuscripts. And so this is essentially the reading that is found in the Textus Receptus. The only difference in the Textus Receptus is that Hapax occurs after Humas. So it's you once. This thing that the Lord, but that's the Byzantine reading, which is very close to the Textus Receptus reading. The third reading that appears is Hapax Panta Hati Hatheos. Now, here is something that's interesting. This is found in the second corrector of Codex C, in manuscript 5, and in some Vulgate manuscripts where the reading is not Jesus, it's not Lord, but it's just simply the reading God. So that's an interesting reading. The fourth one is Hapax Tuta Hati Hakurias. And that's in 307, 436, 642. Then there's a reading Panta Hati Hatheos Hapax. And again, where the reading is Hatheos, or God, rather than either Lord or Jesus. That's in 442, 1243, 2492, some Vulgate manuscripts, and the Philoxenian Syriac. Then there's a reading Panta Hati Ha Kurias Hapax, which is the reading of Codex Sai, Codex 1611, and the Harclean Syriac. There's the seventh reading, Hapax Panta Hati Theos Christos. Now, this is different. This is found in P72, where it reads Theos, but also Christos, so God Christ. So rather than Lord or Jesus, it's God Christ. That's interesting. The eighth variant that's listed is Hapax Panta Hati Jesus, and that's in Codex Alexandrinus, Codex 33, and some others, including in the Vulgate. Then the ninth variation listed in the Nessalon 28 is Panta Hati Ha Jesus Hapax. That's in Codex 88, and I'm not sure exactly how to interpret in the apparatus how some of the references to the versions, because it lists some of the versions for several readings in the Sahidic and the Boharic. There's some evidence for this reading. The tenth variation is Panta Hati Jesus Hapax. That's the text of Codex 1739. It also lists the Sahidic, Boharic, and Origen, which is in the margin of Codex 1739. Then there's, this is an interesting reading. The 11th variation is Hapax Tuta Hati Kurias Jesus. So this is combining Lord and Jesus. So there's one manuscript 1735, which seems to harmonize, having the subject be the Lord and also Jesus. And they make it simply the Lord Jesus or Lord Jesus. The 12th variation is Panta Hapax Gar Jesus. Jesus again, that's in 1739. It's listed as one of the possible readings there. I mentioned this manuscript several times. We've got the text, we've got a marginal commentary from Origen, and we've got a listing of what are called varia lectio, variant readings in the margin, probably. And then finally, the 13th variation is the one that's adopted in the NA28, and it is found in only one manuscript. It's found in Codex Vaticanus. Humas Hapax Panta Hati Jesus. Here's some things to think about when you look at this. It's interesting that the Nessalon reading is really based on one manuscript. This only one manuscript has the exact reading as is now found in NA 28. Secondly, then, the main issue is, again, who is the one acting? Is it the Lord or is it Jesus? But again, there are other variants for the subject. And I put together a little table where I've listed five possibilities. It could be Kurios, Lord. It could be Jesus, Jesus. It could be Lord Jesus. Again, one manuscript, 1735, has that. Could be God. That's found in a few. And it could be in P72, very ancient, the papyri. It says God Christ, Theos Christos. So we should also keep in mind in thinking about the external evidence for the book of Jude and for the Catholic epistles is that we have very little early evidence for the Catholic epistles. And when I did some time back a Word magazine on the Coma Ioanneum, 1 John 5, 7, and 8, and the papyri, I noted that at that time that there are only 8 papyri manuscripts of the Catholic epistles. So there's very little papyri evidence for the Catholic epistles. Of those, there are only 2 papyri. So there are only 2 papyri that might be, you know, earlier than the 4th century for the book of Jude. And they are P72, which has most of Jude, and P78, which only has a handful of verses, verses 4 and 5 and verses 7 and 8. With regard to the unseals, which are later than the papyri in general, we've got a divided evidence. We've got Sinaiticus, one of the 2 heavyweights looked to by Westcott and Hort, reads Kurios, so it would support the traditional reading. Whereas Codex Alexandrinus and Codex Vaticanus, which would be the second of the 2 heavyweights looked to by Westcott and Hort, it reads Jesus. So the papyri evidence is minimal. In this case, P72 doesn't read Lord or Jesus, but it reads God Christ. So the papyri doesn't help. Unseals, it's divided. So this is a place where there's not clear external evidence for any one particular reading. What about the internal evidence? It's interesting to pick up at this point and read Bruce Metzger's textual commentary. And I looked at the second edition of this, which was prepared for the United Bible Society's 4th edition, which would be equivalent to the Nestle-Lawn 27th edition. And it prefers the reading Ha Kurios, with the Ha, the definite article, in brackets. It gives this a D reading, which is a very low rating, but it does suggest this is the proper reading. So the traditional reading, it says Ha Kurios, would be the preferred reading, at least for the subject in this case, the actual word order would vary a little bit from that of the received text in the UBS 4th edition that's reflected here in Metzger's commentary, 2nd edition of his commentary. It suggests that the reading be Panta Hati Ha, with the Ha, the definite article in brackets, Kurios Hapax. It's interesting, though, that even though it gives it a low rating, he says the committee believed the reading of Jesus, which has now been adopted in the Nestle-Lawn 28, quote, was difficult to the point of impossibility, and they explained its origin in terms of transcriptional oversight. And he explains in his commentary that they believe that Ha Kurios was the original reading, and it was written in early manuscripts as a nomina sacra. The nomina sacra were abbreviated names for common terms and proper nouns in the New Testament. And one of the nomina sacra was for the word Kurios, Lord, which appears a lot in the New Testament, right? So instead of writing out the entire word Kurios, they abbreviated it with the first letter, kappa, and the last letter, sigma. and then they would draw a line over the kappa and the sigma. And that would be ancient readers, when they saw that, they would know that's a shorthand for Lord, Kurios. And the writing, the orthography, just the basic handwriting of that, would be very easy to confuse with the nomina sacra for the name Jesus. And instead of writing out Jesus, they would have the first letter, which is iota, and the last letter, which would be sigma. So he suggests that the way the reading Jesus came into the tradition was Kurios was the earliest, and there was confusion over the orthography and the copying, transcribing of that nomina sacra. Instead of the kappa sigma is written there, but the scribe inadvertently wrote iota sigma, Jesus. He also adds in his commentary that nowhere else in the book of Jude does the name Jesus appear alone. But if the name Jesus appears, it appears also with the word Christ. So it appears as Jesus Christ. That's interesting. He adds that although the Jesus or Jesus reading is well attested, he says it would be strange and unparalleled to describe Jesus performing this Old Testament action, because obviously you don't have the incarnation, even from an Orthodox Christian perspective, you don't have the incarnation of Jesus until his conception in the womb of the Virgin, and then his birth in Bethlehem. So it would be anachronistic to talk about Jesus doing something in the Old Testament. It might sound pious, but actually wouldn't fit with Orthodox theology. So it's interesting to read Metzger's commentary. Of course, there's not been, as Gurry has pointed out, there's not been a textual commentary that's been put out by the people who are advocates for the coherence-based genealogical method or the editors of the Editio Critica Major. So we don't have a textual commentary on NA28 in the way that we have it for NA27 and the portions of NA28 that still retain the portions of NA28 that still retain the NA27 readings. We have Metzger's textual commentary explaining the decisions of the textual critics and translators like Metzger. But here it pits one against another. We've got Metzger's view, who favored Hakurios, which sort of represents 20th century text criticism, modern text criticism, over against the framers, the German scholars primarily, who worked on the NA28 Catholic epistles using the coherence-based genealogical method. So it pits the 20th century Metzger against the 21st century, the NA28. So what do we conclude about this, having talked a little bit about this issue? Although the variation here is slight, you know, you would barely notice it just reading the English translation. It does introduce a peculiar challenge. And for those who have embraced the modern critical text, I think it's just emblematic of one of the problems that you have. And that is you never have a fixed and stable text, but you always have, again, scholars who are tinkering with the text. And so for years and years, we've had a consensus about Jude 5, that the reading should be the Lord. And now we have a modern critical edition that says, no, it should read Jesus. And it's interesting that again, if you look at the external evidence, there's no clear cut. It's not like we've discovered manuscripts and the oldest manuscripts clearly read Jesus, and so we should change the text. No. Both readings have antiquity. And again, as I pointed out, I think Metzger gives a very plausible explanation as to why Jesus may have been introduced. It could have been confusion over the nomina sacra from Kurios to Jesus. It's also interesting to look and see how This is a problem for people who have embraced not only the modern critical text, but also modern translations, because now that you have a new standard handbook, you now have modern translations that are beginning to follow this new text. So I've already mentioned the ESV and the NET Bible, the New English Translation Bible. They're sort of early adapters, we might say. They adopted the Jesus reading even before the NA28 came out. Since it's been published, the New Living Translation updated in 2015. It now reads Jesus. And the Christian Standard Bible, which was just released this year, 2017, which is an update of the Holman Christian Standard Bible. There's been a lot of controversy about that translation, the update of the Holman Christian Standard Bible, because of its use of gender-inclusive language and phrasings. And hopefully I might do another Word Magazine just looking at some of the readings in that. So we're having translations, and you know, I'm wondering, is the NIV going to adopt the new reading? Are future editions of the New American Standard Bible, if you've embraced the modern critical text, are they going to change the reading to reflect what is now in the modern critical text? And again, it puts you in the dilemma of always having a shifting and changing text of the Bible and always having to have shifting and changing translations. And you know, when you think about it, these translations, I guess the NET Bible and the ESV and the New Living Translation and now the Christian Standard Bible, these are the first vernacular or popular translations to have Jude 5 read Jesus rather than Lord since the beginning of the Protestant era. It was the reading of the Vulgate, the Latin Vulgate. But since the Reformers, since Luther's German Bible, since Tyndale's English New Testament, on through, you know, the Geneva Bible, the King James Version, even up into, through the modern era, the New Revised Standard Version, the NIV, we've not had Bibles that have read Jesus at Jude 5, but they've read the Lord at Jude 5. So this is really something that is novel. This is something that is completely novel in Protestant Christianity to have Bibles where you have Jude 5 reading Jesus rather than the Lord. And is this drastic change warranted? I don't think that it is, and probably won't surprise you if you've listened to Word Magazine. You won't be surprised to find that I think that it would probably be the best exercise of prudential wisdom if we just stuck with the traditional reading, if we just followed the Textus Receptus. Well, those are some of my thoughts on Jude 5. And again, at some point, maybe before the year is up, I will also do a Word Magazine looking at 2 Peter 3:10, which is even a bigger challenge, I think, for people who've embraced the modern critical text, because it introduces a pure conjecture, gives a reading that doesn't appear in any extant Greek manuscripts. Well, I hope that you found this helpful. And look forward to another Word Magazine in the future. Till then, take care and God bless.